Barnesville, Indiana, on June 17th, 1991, in the historic Lane Place for another in a series of tapings of veterans of World War II. We've had several of these and they've all been very, very interesting, and documents and historical facts are just great, and we know that today our interview will be no exception. My name is Clark Chamberlain. I live here in Crawfordsville. I'm associated with the American Legion and VFW. Lived here for some 25 to 26 years now. Our cameraman today is Ed Miller, VFW and American Legion. And also on the sidelines, and done many of these interviews, is Bob Wormley, semi-retired attorney, who is a former president of the Montgomery County Historical Society and is now a director. Mike Hall, the executive director here at Lane Place, has also been a big help. These tapings will become property of the Montgomery County Historical Society, and a couple of copies of the interviews will be placed in the library. This whole idea started, I believe, with Bob Wormley, who, in watching the Ken Burns documentary on the Civil War, watched the interview with these old gentlemen from mainly the Battle of Gettysburg, who talked about their experiences. They had long whiskers and told about all the tragic things that happened. So far, we haven't had anyone who's had long whiskers like that, but we've certainly had some gentlemen who were very instrumental in the American victory in World War II. So we'll get started with our interview today, and may I ask what your name is?
Lloyd Wells.
Okay, Lloyd. Where were you born?
I was born near Bowers, Indiana, 1918.
In 1918. Who were your parents?
Roy and Zola.
I see. Did you have any brothers or sisters?
I didn't have any brothers, but I had three sisters, Dorothy and Ruby, and later years, Martha Jean.
I see. Yeah. Were you born on a farm?
Yes.
Is it the same farm where you are today?
No. The farm where I was born was about a mile and a half southeast of Bowers, and I now live in Darlington. However, I have a barn that's about a mile north of Shenandoah that my son is operating this time.
We'll come back to that a little later on. Where did you go to school?
I started school in Bowers and was there about 4 years. We moved to Dover, and I was there from the fourth through part of the seventh grade, and then we moved from Dover to Darlington, to the farm out southeast of Darlington that I grew up on. Moved there in the seventh grade and graduated from Darlington.
Graduated from Darlington. That Darlington school does not exist anymore, does it?
No.
Not the high school.
I live just a block north of the old school site, and I was instrumental in getting an addition on the Darlington building after I came back to service. And I also witnessed the destruction of that new addition to the Darlington building.
Oh, goodness.
I don't remember what years, about 1950 or thereabout, is when it was put on, but it was torn down 2 or 3 years ago.
What did you do after you graduated from high school in 1936?
I applied to Purdue. Went to Purdue from 36 to 40, studied agriculture, and was fortunate enough to have many courses under Dr. Earl Butts, and appreciated that experience. Wrote my thesis under Dr. Butts, and became a good friend. Graduated from Purdue in 1940, but in trying to get through Purdue, came up poor family, and I had to work a lot in order to help get through Purdue. And in my need for funds, my brother-in-law talked me into taking a reserve officer training in Purdue. And they paid a small fee for each year's training in Purdue, but I came out of there with a second lieutenant's commission in artillery.
I see.
Which was later a great benefit.
Mm-hmm. Where were you when the Japs hit Pearl Harbor?
I was living in Darlington at that time, about three blocks west of the school building. I was pulling my son in a wagon out on the sidewalk, and my wife came to the door and said they bombed Pearl Harbor. I immediately knew that I was going to be somewhere else for very long.
Had you been doing any type of training after you got your commission from Purdue? Did you belong to any reserve unit and report weekends or anything just at
no.
that time?
No, I didn't. As I recall, I didn't have I think I belonged to a reserve. They had me assigned to some reserve unit, but we didn't have meetings or mm-hmm. didn't have any drills or exercises or anything.
Yeah. How long before they got a hold of you?
It was in March of 42. Pearl Harbor was in December of
41.
So it was about a little over a year later.
Well, that would be just a few months after that. If it was 41, you would call them 42.
42.
Yeah. What happened then?
I got my letter of report to Fort Monroe, Virginia, and assigned to the Coast Artillery Corps. This surprised me, of course, but in the orders, it stated to report to Fort Monroe, and I was put up in a hotel there, Fort Monroe, and I thought, my goodness, this is a wonderful assignment. Be sitting here at the mouth of Chesapeake Bay in the old fort there. No doubt I'll be used to defend this United States here in Chesapeake Bay. Much to my surprise, after the troops assembled there, all reserve officers, called my wife. She came, stayed in the hotel, she and my young son, Kendall, and went to school there for several months. And then they told me that they were forming an aircraft artillery unit that was part of the Coast Artillery Corps at that time. This was a new experience, of course. I knew nothing at all about any aircraft artillery. Later learned that it was 90 millimeter guns, which is a pretty good sized gun, mm-hmm. and it has a muzzle velocity very similar, a little greater than the old German 88 artillery piece that all of our troops learned to despise, because you couldn't hear the gun go off or the shell coming. You heard the explosion first.
Mm-hmm.
And later found out the Germans despised our 90 millimeter artillery piece just as much as we despised their 88.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned your wife. When did you get married?
We were married in 1939, before I graduated from Purdue. The last semester at Purdue, we lived in Purdue, and my son was born about a week before I graduated, before I received my diploma.
What was your wife's maiden name?
Ruth Dale.
Where was she from?
She has always lived in the southeast part of Montgomery County. They moved around quite a bit when she was growing up. I met her in school at Darlington when she was about a freshman. I was about a junior, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what happened from Chesapeake Bay then, where you thought you were going to be a guard? Or guard the area?
Guard the area. We were studying field artillery pieces and various other military subjects. Then we were moved, the unit was moved to south of Wilmington, near Wilmington, North Carolina. And we were there for a few months, trained on old artillery pieces and aircraft pieces. Mm-hmm. And then we shipped out from there and were transported, were given a few days leave, and I came past home. And then went to Camp Hewlin, Texas, down on the Gulf of Mexico, south central Texas, where we received troops, our enlisted men, and non-commissioned officers. Many of them came from the regular Army, and some of them had spent time in the Philippines and all over the world. Army bases, mm-hmm. but they were experienced in anti-aircraft heavy artillery pieces. Mm-hmm. That was the main cadre of our anti-aircraft battalion. Mm-hmm. Then the enlisted men started coming in, and most of the enlisted men came from the state of Michigan.
I see. How long were you in Texas?
Well, we spent, we arrived there in the real hot summer months.
What year now?
42.
Okay.
So it had only been, I went into March of 42, and this was in June or July of 42. And we spent a winter there in Camp Hewlin, Texas. Went through storm comes in out of the Gulf.
Hurricane.
Hurricane. Had to evacuate camp because of the hurricane, and learned a lot from that experience. Mm-hmm. I was one of the few that stayed there as long as we could stand it, and was one of the last to evacuate the camp. But we went inland, of course, about 100 miles to an old rice storage warehouse, and spent the night for the next day, and shipped back into camp. Found all of our artillery pieces that we had left there, been under salt water.
Oh, goodness.
Trucks, vehicles, campgrounds covered with jellyfish, dead cows, rattlesnakes. Had a lot of cleanup duty to do. Had to take all the equipment apart that had been under the salt water and clean it. Lubricated, put it back in order. I don't remember the month that we left Camp Hewlin, but we got orders to ship to New York to ship out. And that would have been in May. We shipped out in May, so probably in
May of 43. Yeah. What was the name and number of your outfit? 302nd.
Anti-aircraft artillery battalion, and I served in B battery mainly. Was in A battery for a while, and overseas served in D battery for a while.
What else? Were you still a second lieutenant?
No, I got a promotion. I don't remember when I was promoted. Now to first lieutenant. Received my captain bars though in Italy. I don't remember what part of Italy.
You know, we'll come to
late in the war.
We'll come back to that later. What what were you in charge of? What how many men, or was it a platoon or a battery, or what was your responsibility?
I was a battery second lieutenant to start off with, and my responsibilities there were to training. Served as a battery commander, and we had about four officers usually, a battery commander, and three other officers in the unit. We had about 150 men, I would guess, now, in a battery. There were four batteries in the battalion, and an administrative supply headquarters battery, what it was called.
Yeah. Now you went to New York from Texas.
We went by way of Camp Shelby, Mississippi. We stopped off there for a short while. We transported all of our equipment and men by train. Stopped off in Camp Shelby, Mississippi first, and stayed there for a few weeks. Then we shipped out of Shelby and shipped all of our equipment to outside of New York, in Boston, near Boston, waiting on ships. And of course, we were shipping a lot of men, material, equipment at that time to Africa to support that effort. And we didn't know, of course, where we were going to go, and never did till we got on the ship.
Where did you embark from?
Embarked from New York. I've been in New York railway station twice, never above ground. They always had the blinds drawn on the train. They didn't want people to know that we were troops. But we went to Boston from Camp Shelby, stayed there for just a few days, and finally got orders one evening to, we're going to ship out that night. We had some men on leave, and I was assigned duty to go try to find these men in downtown Boston and get them back to the camp so we could ship out. My only experience in Boston, but it's a strange city. No straight streets.
Right.
They all curve around.
Right. What was the name of the ship you got on?
I don't remember the name of the ship, but it was one of the ships that was a luxury, one of the luxury liners, I suppose, the Panama Line, and people used it to travel in the Gulf.
Pleasure cruiser.
Pleasure cruiser that had been converted for troop personnel only.
How many men were on the ship?
Several thousand. I don't remember the number, but they had bunks that, of course, had taken out all of the nice accommodations, beds. And, they utilized all of the whole area for enlisted men. I was lucky enough to get one of the better estate rooms on the ship for the passengers.
You have to share that with another officer?
Yes, we, everyone on the ship had 12 hours of bedtime allotted, and you shared the bed with somebody else the other 12 hours. And that was true even down in the hold, where all of the enlisted men and non-commissioned officers went across on. They had these little swinging hammocks like the Navy men are accustomed to.
Yes.
And these hammocks were about four, five, six high, and just barely enough room to squeeze between the hammocks. And that's the way the men.
How was the chow?
Not very good. That was much better than the chow later, though. At least it was cooked in large utensils, and it was good to start with, I'll put it that way.
Okay. Did you, then you started, you didn't know where you were going when you left New York?
No. There were some troops on the ship that studied astronomy, I suppose, or how you find your position from the start. And they, some way, established that we were headed for North Africa. Of course, it wasn't official, and...
Were you in a troop? Was there a convoy?
Very large convoy. This was in May of 43. and we were shipping a lot of troops and materiel to North Africa. It was early in that campaign, and there were a lot of German subs out there, and we could hear depth charges, and we could see the little Navy boats zigzagging around, trying to protect us. It was a long convoy and very wide, a lot of personnel ships as well as cargo ships.
Did you see any subs?
I never did see a sub, but I heard a lot of, we had several alerts, and I remember our chaplain got very excited at the first one. He heard the depth charges going off. He raised up in bed and he put all of his impregnated clothing on. This was in the case of chemical warfare. I don't know why he put the chemical warfare clothing on, but he did. And he was hurting. He was worried. He was scared to death, in fact. That was our chaplain.
Yeah, how many days did it take to get to your the place where you were headed?
I think we were on the water 13 days, as I recall now.
Where did you land?
We landed around Africa. We first knew where we were when we passed through, past the Rock of Gibraltar.
Was that in the daylight?
In the daylight. Oran is just on the northern part of North Africa, towards the west end of the Mediterranean Sea.
As you got close in there, did you see any German aircraft?
Didn't see any German aircraft until after we had been in Oran. We landed in Oran and immediately were transported out southeast of, mainly east of Oran, not very far from the Mediterranean coast.
Were the Germans still in control in North Africa? Was Rommel still there when you landed?
Yes. I'm not sure that we were aware of it at the time. We didn't get news very often, and no newspapers or anything of that kind. But the first idea I had that there was a war going on nearby was the officers of our unit, the battalion, were assigned to MP duty in Oran. And we asked why, and they said the infantry and artillery and tank troops that had defeated the Germans and Italians were coming back into Oran to celebrate, and they needed protection, and they needed people to help get them around Oran in safely, because they were getting pretty high at that time.
Yeah.
Boozed up, couldn't help them a bit, couldn't fault them for that after what they'd been through. Mm-hmm. But that was my MP assignment, to help these troops coming back.
Before we started today, you were talking about seeing burned out German tanks. Now, is this anywhere near the same time?
Yes.
You saw these?
I don't remember now how long we were in North Africa, but we were awaiting our equipment, which came in, most of it came in, the heavy pieces came in on the west coast of Africa, outside the entrance to the Mediterranean. I don't remember the name of the city there. I was never there. Anyway, we had to go down to that port and pick up our heavy pieces and heavy artillery and big prime movers to transport these guns. And as soon as we got our equipment, they were making an attack on the Isle of Sicily. And
they would be
the
Americans?
Americans.
Okay.
Americans were attacking the island of Sicily, just off the toe of the boot of Italy on the west. And we transported from Oran across the north part of Africa, down some steep mountain passes, mountain roads to the seaside there. Tunis, I believe, or Bizerte was where we got on landing ship tanks, LST they call them,
mm-hmm.
and put our equipment and men on these LSTs and were transported. We'd already made, the Army had already attacked Island Sicily, and we weren't in on the initial landings and fighting in Italy. When we got to Palermo, Sicily, which is on the northwest part of the island, we were able to come into the port there at Palermo and unload and set up an aircraft position guarding the port of Palermo and the airfields around it.
Was Sicily secure at that time, or was it still?
There was still some fighting going on in the eastern part of Sicily, and of course in Italy later.
When you made your trip from Africa over to Sicily, did you have attacked by any type of German aircraft?
No, we didn't have any trouble crossing the Mediterranean. We did have some alerts and had some German aircraft attack our position there near Oran before we left there.
Did you shoot at them?
Yes.
Did you hit them?
And didn't hit anything. They were low flying, strafing the planes.
Did you any damage?
Never did. We used 50 caliber machine guns. Couldn't use our heavy pieces. But none of the 50 calibers hit any of the airplanes. I mean, they came in so fast, slow, were gone before we really realized what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Were American fighter planes up trying to intercept them? Was there any?
Didn't see any interceptors. There were American planes nearby. In fact, that's one of the reasons we were set up there at Oran, was to guard the airfields. There were heavy bombers, fighters, fighter planes. In fact, I met Frank Tribbett, who was a Darlington boy, while I was outside of Oran, Africa. And he took me to his camp, showed me some German Stuka planes that they'd captured on the ground. That was the first time I saw Frank, but I also saw him in Palermo, Sicily, and then I saw him again on the eastern coast of Italy.
Okay. What else did you do on Sicily?
It was mainly police mopping up duty, guarding. We never did have any attacks from the Germans while we were in Sicily. So we were just merely waiting for the army to make attacks on Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Never much in any danger.
How far away was the enemy and fighting from Palermo when you were there? How far were the lines where the Germans and Americans were fighting?
We were beyond artillery range all the time that we were in Sicily. But we could hear the guns and the fighting to the east of us.
Did you see them bring any German prisoners in?
I don't recall. No, we didn't have any prisoner duties. We did later on in Italy, but didn't have any prisoner duties while we were in Sicily.
What you mentioned later on, the food situation became worse. Now, where are we to that point yet?
No, I would say the poor food was mainly, it consisted of the sea rations, which were canned rations, three different menus. One mainly for breakfast, one for lunch, one for evening meal. And this didn't vary. I mean, you could vary it during the day if you wanted to, but you just had three choices.
Yeah. What would be the date of when you were in Sicily? What would be the approximate date, Lloyd?
My goodness. Wish I'd have kept the letters I wrote to my wife practically every day that I was overseas here. I could pinpoint that exactly, but I don't.
Latter part of 43?
Yes, because I spent Christmas in Naples, Italy, in 43, and also in 44.
I see.
We were a lot farther north in 44, but then I spent two Christmases in Sicily, in Naples, Italy.
How long were you on Sicily?
It would probably have been a month, 2 months. And we started moving.
Towards Italy?
Towards Italy, on land, across Sicily and across the Straits of Messina.
Is that water? Did you have to go?
Yes, it was water. I don't remember now what kind of ships it was, but really. I met a lady from some news service in the United States. She crossed on the same boat that we were on. But we didn't have, when we crossed there, we didn't have equipment on the same ship.
Did you have attack by the enemy?
No trouble whatsoever crossing.
Mm-hmm. Where did you land in Italy?
I don't remember the name of the town up there on the tow, but it was just across from Sicily. Very short, narrow strait through that area.
And fighting was going on?
It was already, I think, in fact, we had already, the army had attacked Salerno, I believe is where the first attack was made on Italy. That's just north of the toe of Italy, and whatever the name of that town from Messina. And Naples was the first large city north. Salerno was between Naples and the toe of Italy.
Mm-hmm. Where did you set up your anti-aircraft guns?
We would just leapfrog, follow the troops as they were advancing. We were still operating as an anti-aircraft unit, heavy anti-aircraft, which was mainly for protection from bombers, different types of bombers.
Did you see some bombers when you got to Italy?
Very, very few. We fired, I'd say, a half dozen times, which was our primary assignment, on. And most of these firing would have been at night. Couldn't see any airplanes. You could hear them. But once the guns opened up, you didn't even hear the airplanes. And never were bombed from enemy planes.
Mm-hmm. Well, how close are we to the time of Anzio? When they landed there?
Wasn't Anzio near, up near Rome?
Yeah, it was further north than Salerno, Anzio, Leghorn.
Were you in on that invasion at all?
Which was that? No. We sent some troops to Anzio to help bring out the wounded and the dead. Enlisted men, I say troops, but mainly enlisted men. And as I remember, I think that's the one that we took a hard beating. I don't think we had too much trouble at Salerno. I may be getting names mixed up, but I didn't think we had too much trouble in Salerno. But Anzio, I thought it was a pincer movement.
Mm-hmm.
The attack came in on the beach, and we're going to make a set of a beachhead, and the Germans had set up a line, fortification line north of our position, and this was a pincer move in behind their line to try to get at them from the rear, because we were taking severe casualties from always. We had the mountains on the east side of us,
mm-hmm.
Mountains up the center of Italy, and water on the west side, and we were always attacking straight at the Germans and Italians. And that's a rough way to fight war.
Yeah.
So they tried to make a pincer move, and we took a beating there. They pinned their troops down, pinned all of our supply ships down, coming in, couldn't get wounded off the beach. As I remember, that was a bloody one.
Mm-hmm. But you were south of there?
Yes, we were south of that.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing? You talked about you shot at some bombers. Evidently, the battle line wasn't too far from you.
No, we could hear the guns. In fact, when we really got north of Naples, as I recall, they decided that we didn't have any enemy airplanes to shoot at. And they meaning the Army, our higher officials, decided that they could use some more artillery. So we turned from anti-aircraft artillery to ground artillery. And this is when my ROTC training at Purdue came in handy, because I'd had firing experience in my training at Fort Knox, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Learned how to fire at ground targets.
Mm-hmm. Did you go into action then?
Yes.
Fire?
They moved us up then from being a rear area supply protection to ground artillery, and we got within artillery range of the enemy. And the first night, I don't think anyone in any outfit near us had any sleep. The Germans were rolling out the heavy artillery railway guns near Rome and firing at us during the night, of course, just harassing fire, but you could hear the guns go off and hear the shells going overhead all night. And of course, the loud explosion when they hit the ground. And then we got really into the action where we were within the German 88 artillery and their other heavy artillery pieces. And we were supposed to be doing double duty, anti-aircraft, still capable of that, but also doing ground fire for supporting our infantry, tank troops. And of course, we were moving about every day or two. We had to reconnoiter new positions north. And there was one or two times, I know we got behind the enemy lines in trying to reconnoiter new position. Didn't draw any fire, I think. One time we didn't, one other time we did. They fired at us with 88s, machine guns, mortars.
Did you hit any of your men?
Didn't lose any of our men. We were lucky, all lucky to get out of there.
Was that at night?
That's broad daylight.
Did you see the enemy?
Never did see, but we could hear the machine guns going off and see the bullets splattering around us. Mm-hmm.
They weren't close enough for any hand-to-hand fighting?
No, I never did get, unless it would have been one time when we were reconnoitering and the people in the house just drew back the drapes, and I figured later that there were German troops in the house at the time that we were going around their house looking for a position. Because when we went back there the next morning, there'd been a Tiger tank in there that night. So I think we were lucky that time too.
Mm-hmm. Did you capture any German prisoners?
We didn't actually capture any German prisoners. We did accept some prisoners from other units and pass them from the front to the rear.
Did you lose any of our troops to the Germans as prisoners? They capture any of your men?
We didn't have any men in our battalion that were captured by the enemy.
keep telling us more about this incident where you said at times you were behind the enemy lines and you saw somebody looking outside of a grave. Take us from there and tell us what happened, Lloyd.
Well, I should mention that long about this time, we spent two winters there in Italy, and I'm not sure where we were the second winter. Anyway, I do want to bring out that we did have a celebration march similar to what we've had here recently for the troops coming back from the
Gulf
War. But our celebration was in Rome, and I have a picture at home of me leading my battery down one of the main streets in Rome, and there were photographers alongside the street, and they were taking pictures, and then after we would get by, they would try to catch up with us and sell us a picture, which that's the way I got that picture.
March of 45,
that been when that was?
I believe it's right. But then what happened?
We just kept leapfrogging, spent another winter at another line, a fortification line that the Germans put up. That particular winter would have been the second winter that I was sent back.
That's probably the winter of 44-45. So the march you're talking about could possibly have been 44. Am I right on that, gentlemen?
Yes, that probably was the first Christmas I spent, would have been 44, I know that, in Naples. But I was on a rear, I was sent to Army Air Forces headquarters in Naples, and they had radar, long-range radar set up, and were obtaining information on enemy planes were coming down into Italy, and it was my duty to warn our unit from the information that these Army Air Corps units were giving me, warning my unit of any of those flights that were coming down. I remember going out on the street at the first Christmas. I had been, we were getting cigarettes, beer, candy, ration, and I was collecting my candy in an old ammunition box. And I was trading my beer for candy, because I didn't drink beer at that time. And I had an ammunition box full of Lifesavers. And about the only Italian words I knew to try to get a crowd of children around was chocolati. Chocolati, meaning chocolate, of course. I didn't have chocolate, but I had the next best thing. And I hollered, went outside with my candy, called these children chocolati, and I soon had, I'll bet there were 100 children came up there, and I threw the candy out to them. And thinking of these children, many of these areas that we were set up and had no enemy aircraft to fire at, of course, we had a lot of time on our hands, and we had a very nice kitchen. It was an old Italian four-wheel steered trailer that we pulled behind one of our two-ton trucks. And we had our stoves, ovens, all our utensils, cooking utensils for the battery mess in this trailer. And it's set up table outside and serve the food, and then we would eat out of our metal mess kit. leftovers, they always have garbage cans sitting down there. Clean your utensils out of them, then you dip your utensils in the soapy solution, and then rinse them off in a clear solution. But anyway, the children had come up with there, and they were allowed to come up and go through our garbage, our leftovers. And they set up, the children would set up camp, their parents weren't even near them, but there would be sometimes as many as 50 children set up just outside our area. Mm-hmm. And they would eat our leftovers and stay with us many times from one position to another. Even the civilians, Italian civilians, they were hurting for food, they were killing their cats and dogs for meat. Strange story in Sicily was we stopped along the route for a little rest, and we met some people that had been to New York and Chicago, and they would have loved to have been back to New York and Chicago at that time because they were having a rough time. But we always had Native people near us. In fact, we stayed as often as we could, and we set up our headquarters in one of the farmhouses.
Mm-hmm. Now, where was this near?
This has been throughout, up and down, all the West Coast.
All the West Coast. And you were watching for enemy planes?
Enemy planes until we got up near the area of Rome, I would say. And from there on, it was just strictly ground warfare, artillery for us then.
Were you engaging the enemy coming up to?
Oh, yes. There was a battle of Cassino. Monte Cassino was one of the main targets at that time. It was a monastery in central Italy. It was just north of one of the lines the Germans had set up. It was defending heavily. And it was, Monte Cassino was hewn out stone in the mountainside, and the Germans were using it as an observation post to direct artillery fire on my unit as well as other units in that line of fortification. And they sent me, my unit commanders, battalion commanders, sent me on observation to an observation post up on a little knoll. It wasn't really, I wouldn't call it a mountain. But it was a high rise, a high knoll. And it took me up there and let me out with my little pup tent and good observation telescope and some maps. And I served as an artillery observation post officer for several days. And just to my right, to the front, not very many miles away, I would guess now, 3 or 4 miles away, perhaps, Monte Cassino. And just around, down into the southwest from that, was a little river, stream. The enemy, and I had to look down to see across this little stream. And there were Germans on the other side of the stream and Americans on this side of the stream, between me and the stream, infantry, some artillery pieces. And I remember one, it was an interesting time for me. One incident would be to watch the Germans come in with their ambulances each morning and pick up their wounded and dead on the other side of the stream. And we never fired. I never saw anyone fire on their ambulances. However, I did see some Germans fire on our ambulances down below me here. So this angered me a little bit, and there was a little crossroads up northwest of Monte Cassino, and I zeroed in our artillery, four batteries that had been 16 guns, on that crossroads. knew what the time element was from the time they fired until the shells would hit the crossroads. So we had a little target practice there, firing at the crossroads, see an enemy vehicle coming down the highway and fire our guns at times so the vehicle and the shells got there at the same time. Became pretty proficient at it. Slowed up their advances.
Good. That's what had to be done. Were they successful in shooting back at you in any way? Were they getting any of your people in your battery?
They made it pretty uncomfortable for us. This was in this same general area. We had set up a position, and I'd learned in ROTC training that you get, they call it defilade, you get in behind the hill. And the artillery coming over the top of the hill, if it was sharp, it hit on the top or down below. It went over the top of the hill and generally went on past you. But to our amazement, there was a British artillery unit pulled up that same night, and they set up their position on, right on top of the ridge. Of course, the enemy could see their flash of their artillery pieces. And they proceeded, the Germans proceeded to zero in on them. And luckily, we were close enough in to the top of the hill. All the overs went on beyond us. But the British took a terrible beating there. And they pulled out long before morning.
You were under really under heavy attack, weren't you?
We were then.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. It's only because we'd had some good training that we survived that.
Yeah. What, going in under heavy attack, like, was this at day or night?
This was at night.
What, I know you're so busy and so many things on your mind, but what goes through your mind, what went through your mind under a circumstance like this? What went through your mind? Were you thinking of your troops? What do you recall? Now let's take a break. Well, even along about this time somewhere, I believe you mentioned you made captain.
Yes. It was probably along in the spring or summer of 1945. Had a little celebration for the promotion. We had some doctors in our medical unit that had access to the alcohol that the doctors were allowed to have. Came in large metal cans, tin cans, and they drew out the alcohol and the synthetic orange juice, which is a powdered juice formula, and mixed water with that, put the alcohol in with it, and those were our celebration drinks. Didn't take very many to put you under either.
That was the way you celebrated. You talked about writing nearly every day home. What kind of luck did you have getting mail?
We had pretty good luck once we got an applicant, got set up, they kept track of us then here in this country, and they would keep forwarding that mail. And we probably got mail every other day, I would say. It came pretty regular. Sometimes it was only some of these little mailograms or whatever my wife preferred.
V letters.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh yes, I remember those. In your battle with the enemy there, you know, were these German troops that were firing on you and you were firing on them, were there Italians?
When we got into the heavy fighting, it was all German and German, there were Russian-Mongolian troops, but the Germans had kept captured in their battles over with Russia, and they took those prisoners and trained them, very little training, but anyway, they were a body, and they had German troops. I don't know how many German troops there would have been with the Mongolian troops, but anyway, they made them fire at us, but they weren't too, they'd give up pretty easy.
Did you see them?
Oh yes, we, at one time, we were capturing so many, our American troops were capturing so many of German and Mongolian troops that we had to set up an area and accept these troops and hold them for a while until they could get them shipped back farther behind line.
And the Russians were forced to fight then?
Right, they were forced fighters for the Germans.
I see. Where were the Italians at this time, Lloyd?
I think they had given up. I believe that they had given up while we were still fighting in southern Italy. I don't remember the circumstances, and I don't remember how we found out that the Italians were giving up. Our news about the enemy was very small.
Did you, during the battle, see enemy aircraft?
Very few. As I remember, our outfit was only strafed once in all of the campaign in Italy. And again, it was a German, I believe it was a Messerschmitt, came down the valley, and he was here, gone before we could do anything. But he didn't do any damage to us. He didn't see us either soon enough to do anything.
And on the other hand, our planes, did we strafe and bomb the enemy? Like you were talking about on the other side of that river where you were firing across. Did we strafe and bomb them?
We bombed Monte Cassino heavily, very heavily. In fact, we used all the air power we had tried to dissolve that side of the mountain. And when our infantry went into Monte Cassino, there were still a lot of German troops down in the bunkers in the deep bowels of that mountainside. And we suffered severe casualties in taking that area.
Anyone from your?
No, none of our troops. We were again within artillery range, but we were behind the infantry.
Mm-hmm. Well, then what happened?
Well, we kept progressing northward. One of the last we passed, I remember one position that we were set up. We got to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa through our large range finders. They were probably 20 feet long, scope 20 feet long with the lens out on the end and finders in the center. And that you could observe from great distances with that range finder. And I got to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but I never did get to go there physically. I would have liked to have seen it. In fact, this is true of many of the historic places. I was fortunate enough to get to go through a lot of the old buildings in Florence, Naples, Milan, Rome, went up in the top of the cathedral there in Rome, where the Pope stays.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the Colosseum there around in Rome, and some of the seven wonders of the world were located there, I think. So I did get to see quite a bit of it. But the Italians had taken a lot of the precious paintings, sculpture, and put them in a safekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't get to see some of the oldest and most famous.
Okay, well, you said you were going on farther north. Are we getting somewhere near now when the Germans gave up? Surrender?
One of the last battles that we had was in northern Italy, and the Po River was the obstacle that we were facing. And I took off on to reconnoiter a new position up close to the Po River to protect our crossing that we were going to make. And I ran into congested area. There were these ducks that they used to cross water with troops in them. They were tank-like vehicle open on top with tracks around the entire side of the vehicle to propel it in the water. But they were parked, many of them, south of the river. And I'd gone on ahead and found position and eventually got back to where I was to meet my battery coming up the road. And I found them finally on farther south, and they had pulled off the highway, and I asked them why. And the reason they pulled off was there was a Jeep in front of one of our prime movers that was in a position where I normally would have been while we were going on the highway. And a German sniper had hidden in the culvert under the road. And when that Jeep came along, he came out, killed a man on the passenger side of his Jeep, and that would have been me had,
oh my goodness,
if I hadn't been farther forward looking for a new position.
Yeah.
But once we didn't suffer any casualties at Po River, we stayed back. Naturally, we didn't have to get close. But the infantry, the tanks, special engineers made the crossing. They had special pontoon boats, Bailey Bridge material.
Mm-hmm.
Bailey Bridge, they put up a bridge in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
On these pontoons, and we could cross on that. It went up and down as the weight sank the pontoons in the water. Anyway, you could get across.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we got north of the Po River, I think the war surely ended shortly thereafter, and we were in a static position there, and I was fortunate enough to have a day off, and the chaplain and three other officers and myself got into the Jeep, and we traveled across the northern part of Italy, the foothills of the Alps, and went over to Venice, and got to see Venice.
Oh, that's great. That was real great. This would have been in the spring of 45.
Right, spring or early summer of 45. It wasn't long after that when they started announcing how the troops were to come home, and those with the longest days in service and the longest days in heavy fighting territory were selected to come home first.
Do you happen to know who the general would have been that was in charge, so to speak, of the Italian campaign?
The American general?
Mm-hmm.
We were first under, well, I guess it's through most of the campaign, General Mark Clark from Indianapolis, I believe. Mark Clark.
Did you report to a colonel?
Yes.
What was his name?
Can't remember.
Okay.
I had the good fortune of having my supply sergeant visit me about 2 years ago, and he can remember all of these names, all of these cities, all of these towns, all of these experiences that we had. He amazed me with his recall, but I'm not able to do that anymore.
I see. When did you leave to come home then?
We moved back during the middle part of 45, middle months, and in September, either late August or early September, I started on my way back. But it wasn't to go home, I was to go come back to New York, travel across the United States and go into the to the Pacific Theater. It wasn't over yet. And when we left, I left from Naples, coming back, and we were just outside of New York. In fact, we could see the Statue of Liberty when they announced that the Pacific War had ended. So we thought perhaps our orders might be changed, and in fact they were. Once I got home, that was in September, I finally got my discharge in December
of 45. What did you come back on? What kind of a ship and what was the same?
I don't remember that. It was a little less crowded. We had all types of troops. We had a lot of Air Corps officers on the ship. I don't remember some of the high stake poker games that they had there, and there would have been several thousand dollars on each laying there in the center, and I couldn't believe that. I'd never seen anybody have that much money.
That's right, that's right. You got your discharge then in what month did you say, Lloyd?
December of 45.
December of 45. Do you, you answered this question partly when you said to your supply sergeant, do you ever have a reunion or see any of your old group?
We've never had a reunion. We should have had. I have had one of my sergeants from Three Rivers, Michigan, which isn't very far north of where my son Kendall lives in northern Indiana now. I should have looked him up, and I'm going to this summer sometime. Sergeant Lewis, he was my height finder sergeant. And there was a boy from southern Indiana, one of the truck drivers from Jasper, Indiana. He stopped in to see me not long after we got on there. I think those three people are the only people out of our entire battery that, or battalion even, that I have met.
After you got your discharge then, what did you do?
My dad was nearing the age of retirement, and he asked me if I wanted to farm. And not knowing what to do, I readily accepted. I was working at Allison's in Indianapolis when I was called into duty, active duty. And I could have gone back there at factory work, but I'd had 11 months of factory work prior to going into service, and that was enough factory work to suit me. So I've never regretted starting the farm. However, he had 140 acres, and my sister and I had 40 acres that we inherited when my mother died. When she was born, my sister was born. And that was 180 acres is all I had to farm. And that is all that I farmed, really. I never was able to pick up any additional land to rent, and my son had never been able to rent any additional land either. either. I was fortunate enough to get work with production credit in 1955 and worked off the farm practically all the years that I farmed until my farm, my son started farming.
You had, you talked about Kendall being born before he went overseas. Do you have other children?
Yes, I have a son, John, that was 8 years after Kendall was born. A war in between, 5 years at that time, was a war in between.
And Kendall lives in?
He lived in Wakarusa, Indiana, as a veterinarian. He attended Purdue and practices veterinary medicine at Animal Hospital out east of Goshen. Treats mainly dairy cows.
I see.
Has two sons. One of those sons attended Purdue. John, my youngest son, graduated from Purdue. No. 18 years after 45, 22 years after 1945, and he's farmed since he got out of Purdue. And still farming.
Does he have children, John?
John has a son and a daughter. Daughter will be a freshman in North Montgomery High School next year, and the son will be an eighth grader in Northridge Middle School.
Glad to separate you have four grandchildren.
Four grandchildren.
Great. Well, Lloyd, this has been a real pleasure, and we certainly do thank you for being willing to share your experiences with us. I know there were times it was mighty rough. Your name is well known in Montgomery County. You've been a real asset to the people here, and thank you so much for what you've done for us and what you did for America. Thank you.
I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Thank you.